You are Locked On A's, your daily Oakland A's podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It's time for Locked On A's. Stepping to the mic, it's your host, Jason Burke.
Thank you, Amelia. And how's it going, A's fans? Welcome to episode 315 of the Locked On A's podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am your host, noted baseball fan, Jason Burke. And on today's episode, I am talking with Jeff Ellis of Locked On Indians. We were talking a little bit about the A's draft, a guy that he was very excited about. The steal of the draft, according to him, went to Oakland. So you're going to find out who that was in just 1 minute. We also talked about Cleveland's struggles heading into the All-Star break. So that was a big, big deal. They had lost 9 straight before they swept Kansas City. And I asked him point blank, is Cleveland a good baseball team? So he has an answer for that as well. It's going to be a very interesting weekend. But before I send it over to that, this episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the app and join me this week on Sunday at game time to get in on the action. You can also follow this podcast wherever you like hearing podcasts. The Odyssey app is one that we like to plug over here because they're good friends of ours. You can also follow the show at Locked On A's on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at ByJasonB on Twitter and in the Spotify Green Room app. So if you want to talk to me live, maybe get featured on the show, I'll be there Sunday at game time and we will talk some baseball. Also, if you have any questions for us, please send those to lockedonathletics@gmail.com. So without further ado, here is some of my talk with Jeff Ellis. We talked for like an hour, so I'm gonna chop it up. It's gonna sound great. So here's my talk with Jeff Ellis of Locked On Indians. All right, today I am joined by the host of Locked On Indians. He also runs draft stuff here over at Locked On, and he knows Melissa Lockard. You all know Melissa Lockard. It's Jeff Ellis, you guys. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well. Talking about Melissa, the nicest person in the business. I will stand by that. I don't know if I've met a kinder soul in my time doing this writing / everything else thing over here at Locked On.
She's fantastic. I always enjoy just talking to her about whatever, you know, comes to mind. I'm like, hey, I got some questions about these guys. You want to record a podcast? She's like, okay, that sounds great. It's wonderful. But speaking of the draft, just a second ago, you said that the A's took your favorite sleeper in the entire draft, and I've been biting my tongue for 2 minutes so that I could record your answer. Who is this person that is your favorite sleeper that the A's ended up taking?
So I want to make sure I pull up his stats so I have them in front of me correctly as well, but it's Denzel Clark. I think anyone who maybe could have made a decent guess that that would be the player. I mean, he's 6'5", plus speed, plus raw power, cousin of the Nailers, and mom was a heptathlete and has stayed like a track coach her entire life. So you're like bloodlines, you know, at the wazoo. And then just looking at his performance, it's at Northernton, Cal State Northridge, I'm sorry.
I was like, hey, you know better than me. I thought it was Northridge, but you know.
No, directional ones get me confused. They can never keep track, like all the various Illinois ones. Those always throw me because like Owen Miller went to one of them and I can never keep track which one. But the Big West is not the biggest conference. He did strike out about 23% of the time, but I like the 15% walk rate. And then anyone who listens to Locked On Indians knows that I always talk about one of the stats. Like, I don't look at batting average. I don't, but I look at BAPIP because I'm trying to be good about giving Chris Mitchell, who used to do Cato at Fangraphs, credit, because I believe it was his article before he left baseball to work in, I'm not sure exactly what he does now, but, you know, he did some great work. I used to love to read all of it, but he was going through like trying to find what is the best indicator stat for lower minors bats, because as players go through, we all get very excited about guys in low A and high A, and then they flame out in double A. It's part of the reason I'm very conservative in draft rankings, and I should say more prospect rankings in general, is I've just been burned too many times. I'm not going to get super excited, but he pointed out that like one of the best indicators is BAPIP. because in the lower minors, it's not a sign of luck. It's a sign of good contact, that when you are that much more talented than your competition, you're not, I mean, there's always going to be some degree of luck, but that it helps indicate a strong hit tool or potentially a strong hit tool. So when you're looking at a guy who, you know, is in a smaller conference, it's the same thing. He's also fast, so that's going to make it go higher. But, you know, either way you look at it, a 404 this year, a 591 in the COVID season, and a 396 or 349, I'm sorry. So for his career, he's at 398, which is another just positive sign. So he might be more of a three outcomes guy. And again, you're waiting for him to grow into power. Yeah, I just, when I saw the bloodlines, I saw the walk rate, I saw the BABIP, I saw like size and physical tools, natural tools. I was like, this is a guy to watch. In my final mock, because of those physical tools and production, I made sure to include everyone. You know, Astros fans, the Astros might have cheated, but there are good Astros fans out there. We don't have any on network. I'm kidding. I hear some exist. I'll meet them someday, I'm sure. No, you know, I feel bad for the fans in general, because I would feel conflicted about that season. So I get it, but I don't want to exclude anyone. So Denzel Clark was my third round pick to the Houston Astros. They had Tyler Whitaker still on the board, so they took him, and Denzel Clark went in the fourth. I thought it was a decently ranged pick for projecting to the Astros, because the Astros also, I don't want to say they cheat, but they have some creative drafting where they kind of draft players. Like when you look at Corey Lee and Seth Beer, they have this history of drafting guys and putting them in the lower minors to excel, to raise their draft profiles, and then have a better trade asset later. So I thought he was exactly the type of guy, when you look at the size, speed, and power, that if he did really well in like low A, they could trade him next deadline for a significant piece.
I think that he's the one guy that A's fans kind of know about outside of Max Muncy, obviously. So we're all a little bit excited about Denzel Clark potentially in the green and gold.
If you don't mind me just throwing this in, then if you want someone a little bit off the beaten trail, I do like Brett Harris, who they took in the seventh round. He gives me some Chad Pinder vibes, to give a positive. Not, I know some people hate comps, and I don't think Pinder is quite as big, but I think there's some similarities in potential profile. I don't know if Harris is going to hit as well as Pinder, but like, I think he's that utility type that I also liked a ton. After that, it was just a very defensive heavy group with some of the other picks. And then day three was, older players. Like, it was mostly guys born in the 90s. I didn't know their 11th rounder super well, I have to be honest.
Eduardo Rivera.
You know, he's just a big kid. He is not my favorite 6'7" pitcher in this draft. That went to the Milwaukee Brewers, who took the 28-year-old pitcher.
There was a 28-year-old pitcher? Well, he's 18, so.
Yeah, the Brewers took a 28-year-old pitcher in the 20th round.
That is interesting. Okay.
Yeah, he's fun. Everything I could find on him was in Spanish, but luckily I took like 7 years. Don't ask me to speak it, and don't ask me to understand if you speak it to me, but I can still read it.
Okay.
He was 6'7", 180 was the pitcher they drafted.
Oh, wow.
So he's, and I found a video of him online throwing like 98, 99. So I get why they took him in the 20th. But if you're a deep drive draft player, I'm sending everyone to go check out this kid the Brewers took, because he's the oldest player ever drafted. We had that happen this year.
I just look at Eduardo Rivera, the 11th round pick for the A's. He's a 6'7" lefty, and I know nothing else about him. I think he goes fastball, curveball, according to The Athletic. And that's enough for me. I'm like, hey, you know what? I want to see this guy pitch, because tall lefties are always good. I think that that's just a fact. Hey, it's me again, and I'm going to take you behind the curtain. I ended on a high inflection note, and the editing that I was trying to do was going to sound really, really weird, so I'm making this a break instead. So how's it going, everybody? Hopefully you guys are enjoying the talk that I'm having with Jeff Ellis. We got more coming up. We're talking about the series at hand this weekend, coming up in just a minute. But first, I got to tell you guys about Built Bar, because they are the best tasting protein bar in the galaxy. And did you know that Built Bar has 9 delicious delicious flavors in their core packaging. They have something for everyone. And when you talk to somebody who likes Built Bar, like I like Built Bar, they always are passionate about the ones that they love. If you don't know the Built Bar flavors, here you go. My favorite is Cherry Barcia. I've talked about it before. It is absolutely fantastic. I love it. I love it. I love it. But there's also coconut, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, strawberry, orange, cookies and cream, and German chocolate. They're all fantastic. And usually you're going with 17 or 18 grams of protein. You got 130 to 180 calories and only 4 to 5 grams of sugar. They're all tasty. They're all healthy. They're all just absolutely amazing. So to get your hands on some of these delicious treats, all you got to do is go to built.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you will get 15% off your first order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. And now back to my conversation with Jeff, where I ask him who is going to no-hit the Cleveland baseball team this weekend in Oakland. Enjoy. So let's switch over to the actual weekend series that we got coming up here. And first question off the bat, I'm starting hot. Which A's pitcher is going to throw a no-hitter against Cleveland this weekend?
I mean, I have to go with, I'm contractually obligated to go with Chris Bassitt. My grandfather is in the Akron Tips Hall of Fame, a part of the Alumni Association, like Circle of Honor, was like president of that, played football there before World War II started. So I have to go with the greatest player in the University of Akron history. We'll have to see, you know, what JT Brubaker, if he can challenge Bassitt. But those are, you know, right now you got those two guys and Mike Birkbeck, who is more famous for being the pitching coach at Kent State for the last 20 years. So every pitcher who's come out of Kent State that you've ever heard about was coached by him. That's like the three biggest success stories. I was a program that they went away and has come back, and Chris Sabo of the Reds is now the coach. So that's a little bit of University of Akron time.
That's Chris Sabo. I like it.
Yeah, they brought the program. A lot of baseball programs get cut. It was nice to see one come back, and Akron brought theirs back. And the recruiting coordinator after the first year, which was the COVID season, perfect time to come back, actually got a head coaching gig at like Oakland, the one in Detroit, not the one in California. But yeah, so the program is on its feet, and it's nice to see it. But Chris Bassitt, criminally underrated. It's crazy to me like how that guy still flies under the radar to the degree that he flies under the radar. But yeah, like I said, I have such personal ties. My family had a Middle Eastern bakery that was like walking distance from the university. And my grandfather sent me to camps there. I grew up on the University of Akron campus in a lot of regards. So Chris Bassitt, I will love and root for. You know, if they have to lose, that's the one where I'm like, well, hey, at least Chris Bassitt gets the win. I can't bring myself to 100% root for him, but I'm not going to be brokenhearted if he plays well.
Do you think that Cleveland has a decent shot this weekend? Because I was looking over some stuff, and they've got Luplow, Naylor, Rosario, Bieber, and Savali are out, I believe. At least they are right now. Maybe that changes tomorrow if they're getting healthier. And then they had lost 9 straight before sweeping Kansas City before the break. So it's not like they were on fire going into the break. And usually the first game back or that first series back, you're trying to get the bats back up to speed with the pitching. And I think that the A's pitching is probably better than Cleveland's pitching. And the A's bats are definitely better than the Cleveland bats. So what do you think of just the series as a whole with all of that?
So the Indians had a ridiculously easy June. There's no other way around it. They had the cakest of cakewalk schedules. I mean, the Cubs and the Cardinals were like the hardest teams on that entire schedule. And the Cubs, you know, just started selling off pieces today because they started, you know, things went badly for them. And at the end of June, they're only 2 games over 500 for that month because, I mean, they're beat up. It's a team where their pitching staff wise, there was a clear top eight for pitchers in their kind of who they had on their team and who was in the upper minors. 7 of those 8 have spent significant time on the DL this year. Mm-hmm. One of them, Scott Moss, has still not pitched. Tristan McKenzie is the only player who has not been hurt and said he's led the big leagues in walks, still might lead the majors in walks. he's a guy who can just start, he can stop being a pitcher and start being a thrower. It'll kind of turn on and off for him. And that's been an issue. And it's kind of like an organizational issue for, I mean, up till like July, I want to say, the top five listed starting pitchers on their AA affiliate in terms of prospect rank had combined to throw zero pitches. For whatever reason, it's like up and down. They're just, their pitchers are incredibly beat up. They're, you know, JC Mejia, you guys won't see, but he had never pitched. I'm not even sure if he'd pitched in high A before this year.
When he started on Monday against Houston, I think.
Yeah. So it's like, Quantrell wasn't supposed to be a starter. I've been an Eli Morgan fan since they drafted him. Before the eighth round, like I literally put on Twitter, like, isn't this the round where it's time for the Indians to draft Eli Morgan? And they did. So that bought me some like credibility for a while, just because I was able to like successfully call that one. He's looked better of late. It was definitely rough at first. We'll see how it goes. I do like the joke that if you look at him wrong, though, like when he was in AA Akron and I'd be down there scouting and doing media stuff, I thought he was the bat boy once, because he is like 5'8", 5'9", and I hadn't seen it. You see him from the front, you're like, okay, no, that's an adult. But he's just, you know, something for Oakland fans to look at. He's going to be one of the smallest starters you're going to get a chance to see, especially a right-handed pitcher. But Morgan and Quantrell have looked better. Plesac had one game back. He was okay. We still don't really know what type of pitcher Plesac is. He's been hurt. He's been up and down this year. He was fantastic in a limited role last year. Anyone who really feels like they have a hold on Zach Plesac is lying or lying to themselves. So pitching wise, I don't think that's a debate. Now the Indians' pen might be on par or better than Oakland's. There's very few teams. The only problem with the pen is Brian Shaw is not good. And Tito keeps relying on him. He has more walks so far this year than he has had in any season of his entire career. And this is a guy who multiple times led the big league in innings pitched when he was with the Indians. He's got a walk rate per nine over seven. It's not good. Missing bats at a rate he's never really missed before. I was trying to pull up, where's his K rate? Yeah, it's at an 11. For his career, it was an eight. So he's just all over the place. But this is a guy who always limited walks, and he's a free passes left and right. But he's Tito's guy, so Tito overuses him. And you've got the two, Class A and Karinchak. And Nick Sandlin has been really reliable as well, who's a rookie call-up. And they've got some nice pieces, so the pen stands out. And the lineup is, it's coming together. As crazy as that might sound, Amed Rosario has been about a league average bat since May 1st. Franmil Reyes, part of the reason they were able to beat Kansas City was he missed a month. He was out for all of June, most of May. He just came back strong. Jose Ramirez is Jose Ramirez. Bobby Bradley has been fantastic as a call-up. If the season ended now, we'd probably get Rookie of the Year votes. Harold Ramirez has been beyond what anyone could have hoped. He's been a well above league average bat. It really comes down to this team. Cesar Hernandez has already tied his highest home run total ever in a season. It's a lot of weird things happening in that regard, but you know, they have Eddie Rosario's hurt and he hasn't played well. They have issues in center field, but if you're a Cleveland fan, you're looking at this team and the way they're playing. Nolan Jones has been on fire over the last few months. Andres Jimenez has done really well in AA or in AAA. So the roster has some holes, but they also have just a preponderance of talent in the upper minors. And something we've talked about on our show many times is they're under the biggest 40-man crunch I have ever seen in my history of covering any organization. They're going to have to be buyers at the deadline, because otherwise they're going to lose players this offseason. They need to add somewhere between 12 to 13 bats. And like we've talked about in the show, like I was not planning to add Will Benson, but after years and years of struggle, the former first round pick actually leads the entire minors and runs created plus. So I guess you have to add him. But he was like an afterthought, and he's, you know, one of the guys I debated. I'm like, oh, Richie Palacios, like, do you add him? He's got good bloodlines. He's had good production when healthy. He leads the entire minors in on-base percentage. So they're in a weird, weird situation where, yeah, they're struggling. And Oakland might catch them at the right time, because honestly, I expect them to be a team that goes and buys. Like I said, they have to buy. They have to do 3-for-1s or 4-for-1s. or they're going to lose, you know, like I said, if they can only add like eight guys, I wouldn't be shocked to see them lose 3 to 4 players in the Rule 5 draft.
Hey, it's me again, and this is why I like doing the crossovers, because I am about to ask him on this podcast, you're about to hear it, whether or not the Cleveland team could be sellers at the deadline, and he's going all in and saying, no, they need to make trades because they're going to have a roster crunch during the offseason, so may as well go get some extra talent. So that is very intriguing to me. I'm going to ask him that question, get his opinion on that, no matter what, because I wanted to ask the question, but before we get into that, today's episode is also brought to you by BetOnline, and BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to place a bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all of the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all of your sporting needs, including baseball, basketball, the NHL, the NFL, and all of your UFC or MMA action. I know that I said NHL and NFL, but futures, baby! You can bet on the future! And right now, I just looked it up. They have James Caprillion at plus 1600 to win the AL Rookie of the Year. They have Nick Madrigal in there for some reason, too, at plus 800, even though he is out for the rest of the season. So if you'd think that James Caprillion is going to pitch his way into the postseason and pitch the A's into the postseason, those are some good odds right there. I like them. I know Adolis Garcia has run away with it, but give it to James Caprillion. I think that he's going to have a monster second half. So before the next pitch, head on over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all of the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs in the playoffs. It's the second half, you guys. Teams are getting ready for the trade deadline and also making their runs towards October baseball. I love this time of year. Head on over to their website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. And that is why everybody says that BetOnline are your online sportsbook experts. And now here's the rest of my conversation with Jeff Ellis of Locked On Indians. We have another 30 minutes of audio, and I'm going to try and trim that down to the best things that I liked, because I've had some very long interviews for you guys this week. So I want to give you guys some time to be with your family. So I'm going to trim it down to make the best podcast that I can. It's going to sound weird, but it's going to be great content. Hopefully you guys enjoy. That was actually my next question, because they are currently 8 back of the Chicago White Sox, who are getting Eloy Jimenez back at some point in the next few weeks, you would imagine. And then if you just look at their records against teams above 500, they're 15-25. So they're not playing the best of the best terribly well. Against teams under 500, they're 30-17. And a lot of that is because they are 8-1 against the Royals. Everybody else, they're roughly 500, if not below 500 against. So I was going to ask, are they going to be sellers? But you said that they got the roster crunch. And also, I was looking at a lot of their roster. I'm like, is there a lot of guys that they really could sell? I mean, Rosario's hurt right now, and he hasn't been playing great. Maybe Ahmed Rosario would be a guy, but he's got a couple of years of control. And he just came over, too, in the Francisco Lindor trade. So it's going to be
Cesar Hernandez is probably their biggest piece.
Yeah.
Because you think that, well, you can call up Jimenez and shift Rosario to second base because he's not really a great defender. I mean, I think they would talk Ahmed. I think if they got bowled over, they would talk Karen Chalk. I honestly think they would. But they're kind of hoping to get something for him, like we've seen. Sometimes teams go, you know, like they made when they made their massive trade for Andrew Miller. They might talk that. But yeah, they're just because of the situation that they are in roster-wise. And for them too, it's, you know, they are 8 back, and you mentioned all of that. They have not had any starters for a month. Their top 3 got hurt. Their 4th starter just kind of imploded. Their 5th starter wasn't very good. And the guy who was supposed to be the number 6 hasn't thrown a pitch this year. So once they get Plesac and Savali, who one all-star and one player you could have argued should have been an all-star, they've been down, you know, 2 all-star pitchers and are still somehow second in the division. So, you know, I kind of picked them to win 90 games this year. I don't know if they're not on that path anymore. I think part of it is due to injuries, but just because their situation, they have to roll over talent. They're, I said, the crunch, I started the year with a list of 10 players that they have to add and three maybes. Of those 10, they've already added three. One has played his way off of it. And the maybes, the system has played so well, they're up to like six more maybes for it. So it's, Keith Law, I know, had them the number two system in baseball to start the year. And the system is not just because of the draft, but just overall the way players have played, that system is much improved from even before the season began. There were a lot of players who there were injury or health question marks who were just, I saw like Daniel Espino, I'm not the biggest guy on him, but through like two innings, he had struck out five tonight and was hitting 97 at the low end of his fastball. They're in a very interesting position. So I think they're probably going to be buying. Organizationally, they don't have like any center fielder. Their number one center field prospect might be former California kid, Petey Halpin, who they drafted last year, who did get the call up to low A about a month ago. They are being aggressive and moving some of last year's draft picks, but still they don't have a center fielder anywhere in the system. So, if Baltimore would ever consider trading a Cedric Mullins, the Indians could put together an interesting package of like four prospects, just all Rule 5 eligible guys that, Baltimore's 40 man is, all about flexibility. So they would be a team that would essentially doing what the Padres did a year ago is what the Indians have to do.
So you said that if Cleveland was bowled over in an offer for Karen Jack, they might consider it. Use the A's system as a template if you want to. Define being bowled over to go get him. Because the A's, I think, could put together a decent package. I just don't know if they're the same guys that you would enjoy. I'm always focused on the A system. So I'm like, yeah, this guy's good. This guy's good. They have depth over here, and I think they can make something work. But define bowled over from your standpoint.
Well, just knowing the Indians, they'd want more than what they paid for Andrew Miller, because Andrew Miller was 3 years of control at, $9 million a year. So when you're looking at Karinchak, you're getting four more years of control and he's pre-arbitration eligible. Mm-hmm. And the cost for Andrew Miller was Clint Frazier when he was a top 25 prospect, Justice Sheffield when he was a top 50 prospect. JP Feiereisen, when he was like the 11th, he was probably about the 12th rated prospect in the system. And then Ben Heller, who was the 10th rated prospect, who was hitting 100 routinely as a reliever himself, was the top. They traded their top two relief prospects, their number one prospect and their number three prospect for Andrew Miller. And I think they would expect more.
I don't think again, Miller
was,
that.
Yeah. And Miller was, like I said, he cost money. He's making like $8 or $9 million a year at the time. So that the Indians don't have any regrets about that trade because they rode him to the World Series. But yeah, they're essentially, unless it is that Andrew Miller deal all over again, I don't think they're moving on from him. Like I said, maybe if some I think Tito would get mad if they tried to trade Shaw. So I don't think it's him. But I do wonder if Nick Whitgren from the pen hasn't pitched very well, or they would probably move on from him. They don't have a lot of, they're in this weird place. If someone wanted Roberto Perez, I think they would trade him, or they're more likely to hold on to Hedges. But yeah, it's interesting. Like a lot of Indians fans are like, what is he even talking about when Heyman said, the Indians are probably going to be sellers. And it's like, they might be willing to sell everyone who's, of a certain age, but they're a weird team because they only have two players under contract for next year. Everyone else is an option or a free agent or a arbitration eligible. Do you think they can overcome Houston? Do you think this is a wild card squad? What's kind of your thought on the Oakland Athletics from, more projecting to the future, to the playoffs?
Ask me in a couple of weeks. I've been saying for, it feels like close to a year. Well, maybe not quite a year, but after last season ended, I'm like, it feels like this season, the one that we are currently in, is a lot like the 2014 season when the A's traded Cespedes to get John Lester. And then they also traded to get Jeff Samardzija and Jason Hamill. And it feels like they're going to go make those moves to address the what they need to address on the roster. And they haven't done it yet. But obviously the trade deadline is still a couple of weeks away. So I feel like they're going to go out and get Nelson Cruz. It's not, a done deal by any means, but there's not a lot of other teams that are really interested in Nelson Cruz. And he is definitely somebody that they could use because he's been fantastic. And I think that he would add a lot of validity to their lineup. So you add him with, you know, Olsen and Chapman and Laureano and Canna, and Elvis Andrews getting on base in front of him, or, you know, whatever you want to do. I think that that would be a very, very nice pick for their offense. And then I think that they're going to go out and spend the trade capital if they need to on Craig Kimbrel. And I know that he has a team option for next year, like $16 million, but they can also just trade him in the offseason if they feel like it. So they don't necessarily need to pay him, or just pay the buyout and do that too. So I don't know that that money is going to be a huge factor for the A's. I know that it, you know, vests if he closes this many games and this many, but I don't, they can make sure that he doesn't do that. Cause that's contract manipulation, friends. And then go get somebody else. And then I'd feel pretty decent about this team. They've been not pitching and they haven't clicked this season. And that is good. I mean, they clicked for a little bit, but even during their 13 game winning streak at the beginning of the season, it was like, oh, they scored, you know, one, and then they didn't give up any, or they scored 14 and they gave up 13 or something like that. So it wasn't like they've been hitting on all cylinders. They got a little bit lucky in those 13 games. The Twins were not playing very well, so that definitely helped in at least a couple of those. And I think that this team, if they are hitting on all cylinders heading into the postseason, I think that they're going to be a scary team. The thing that is a little bit worrisome, and you can't really address it yet because they've been fine as the starting rotation, because Chris Bassett's been fantastic. He was an all-star. Sean Manaea had a case to be an all-star. Frankie Montas is getting the game three start out of the break, which, sure, I mean, I'd probably put him fifth just because that's kind of how he's performed overall. But outside of three blow-up starts against pretty decent teams where he gave up like seven or eight runs, he's actually had like a 3 ERA against everybody else. So he's been fairly good, but his ERA looks bad because of three bad starts and, you know, small sample size and all that stuff. Cole Irvin's been fantastic. If he's hitting his spots, he's great. And then James Caprillion is the guy that nobody pays attention to yet, but they're about to, because he is a big game pitcher and I love watching him pitch. My question about them is the innings, because ace pitchers do not pitch over 200 innings. That's just something that does not happen. They're usually right around 150 to 175. And right now, they've been fairly lucky with health. I mean, Mike Fiers has been out, but sure, I guess. Do they need more pitching? And if somebody gets hurt, then that could really tank their season. But with the five guys that they got going right now, I am very, very happy. And I mean, they still got Luzardo waiting in the wings if he can figure it out. And then they also got Dalton Jeffries. Maybe he is another option. But the five guys that they have right now are definitely playoff caliber. And I like a lot of what they're doing. They just need to make some tweaks and then hopefully overtake Houston in the AL West and then stay out of that wild card game.
I we're probably going long here. I was just, what threw me off here is now I was like trying to think, like, when is the last time Cleveland and Oakland actually made a trade?
I don't know.
I can't think of one.
Brandon Moss.
What was that?
Brandon Moss.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Where
was like, there was a guy and I wanted Francisco Lindor for him, but I was joking. And who was it?
I was willing to trade Jose Ramirez in that deal.
Ooh. Wow, yeah. And you only gave up Joey Wendell, who's also an all-star. So. Star.
Who's the greatest sixth-round pick in team Indians history by war. Yeah, a player that I was hoping they'd try to acquire cheap this past offseason because he had that bad 2020. But yeah, then
trade by Billy and the boys.
Yeah. I mean, you guys got an all-star for Moss. You just didn't keep him.
That's the thing.
that's the bigger problem is – he didn't get that opportunity.
John Jaso for him, I think. No, that wasn't Jaso. Who was that? Now it's going to drive me insane.
Loudly type to see what that trade was. And he was, and the crazy thing for his Indians fans, like, more, but he was a senior sign. He was a $10,000 signing bonus. He was cheap to
Jonah
draft.
Heim.
Oof.
So they's got Elvis Andrews out of that deal. Boom! Joey Wendell.
Okay, so he was traded. So he must have been designated for assignment or something because he was traded for a player to be named later. So they must have, the player to be named later was Jonah Heim. So I'd have to go dig, but I'm betting he was like designated for assignment, taken off the 40 man.
Yeah, he had to be, right?
Yeah, he had been, he had 118 plate appearances. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't good, and he was already 28. or 27 when he left, but oof. Yeah, I mean, that,
I mean, he hit 266, but his on base was 305, and you're like, all right, well, but his defense is so good now. Yeah. If his defense had been that good, they probably would have kept him, but also they weren't about to be any good anyway, so.
Yeah, so Joey Wendell, that's another common connector, and we're both organizations, and be like, oh, why did we let him go? And every organization can be like, why didn't we just give him 11,000 to play for our organization?
All right. Well, that is all that I got for you. Yeah, where can people find you on social media, man?
I'm pretty easy. At Jeff MLB Draft is the main one. You can also at, I should know Mark or Locked On Indians one, but you know what? I don't, because my co-host runs it. So if you type Locked On Indians Twitter, you'll find it. It's, you know, it's the one that retweets our episodes. It's not like it's super complicated. A's fans are intelligent. I'm going to, you know, very smart fans. They can figure it out. I've got faith in them.
Locked On Indians. It's very tricky to remember.
You know, there's the various variants, and I'm just kind of like, oh, is it at Locked On Indians?
Yeah, is it LO underscore? Or, yeah, I always got to type in.
And the worst part is I'm the one who created that account. So.
That's awesome.
I just forgot it. I, you know, I was like, hey, I'm bringing in a co-host. Part of your job is you got to deal with social media, because I don't want to. Thank you.
All right, Jeff, thank you so much for joining me. And we'll do this again, maybe when the A's play Cleveland again, or if you guys like, go ahead and sweep the Astros, I will have you on next week and we will have a great, great conversation about that series.
No, I totally agree. I think that'd be fun. Or if a trade happens, we'll have to jump on and chat. You know, you never know. There's always a chance for something.
Sounds good. All right. Take it easy, man.
Catch you later.
A huge thank you to Jeff Ellis for spending so much time with me. I chopped off about 25 minutes of this conversation, so if it sounded weird, I apologize, but I wanted to get, especially in that third segment, some of the best things that we talked about, and I even have a little Easter egg coming up for you guys right before the music hits, so that's going to be fun. Coming up next week, I'm going to be talking, obviously, early in the week about the A's stadium situation. It's coming to a head. Tuesday is decision day, and Tuesday's episode may come up a little bit later because that vote is happening early in the morning, so I'll probably record and have that one for you guys in the afternoon. So just a quick heads up on that. But as for A Stadium news right now, there's going to be a term sheet released to the public. It may already be out by the time you're listening to this. It's coming up on Friday, so that's what they're going to be voting on Tuesday. So there's going to be a lot of discourse on the internet. Go follow Casey Pratt on Twitter. He's doing a fantastic job and giving me a little bit of hope that the A's may be staying in Oakland, and that means a lot to me. So give Casey Pratt a follow. He's fantastic. But that's what we're talking about the first couple of days. We'll also talk about the A's on the field and, you know, the second half and all that stuff. It's going to be fun, but that is going to be the big dark cloud hanging over Oakland for the first couple of days next week. So got to talk about it. Also, make sure to go listen to the Locked On Today podcast. I appeared on there earlier this week and I talked about the A's stadium situation. And on today's episode, they're talking about Tom Brady, and he gave fans another reason to love or hate him. I'm going to go with hate him. I don't know what he did, but I assume that I don't like it because Tom Brady. So yeah, go follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. You guys can follow this podcast on wherever you like podcasts, the Odyssey app. Let's just say the Odyssey app. Just go to the Odyssey app and follow us and do all that stuff. Also, follow us on social media at Locked On A's on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at ByJasonB on Twitter and in the Spotify Green Room app. And if you have any questions for us, trade proposals, any ideas that you want me to talk about, send them to LockedOnAthletics@gmail.com. So that's all that I got for you guys today. So until next week, go out and celebrate good times, Oakland, and I will talk at you on Monday. Here's the thing with Ricardo Rincon. He is not beloved in Oakland by any means, because I lived through the Ricardo Rincon years, and he was Ricardo Rinblown. Ho, ding, boom. Yeah, he was not good.